This program is provided by lawyer Kyung Jin Kim.
So I want you to picture this. You're sitting in this completely nondescript office in Beijing.
Okay, setting the scene. I like it.
Yeah, and the date is June 9, 2026. And a directive just lands right on your desk.
And let me guess, it's not just a polite suggestion from management.
Oh, definitely not. It comes directly from the highest levels of the Chinese government, specifically the Ministry of Industry and Information Technology.
Right, the MIIT.
Exactly. Along with the SASAC, which, you know, they control China's massive state-owned enterprises.
Right, the heavy hitters.
Yeah. And this isn't one of those vague 10-year vision statements about the future of tech that just gets filed away in some drawer.
No, this is highly specific.
It is. There is a hard, completely non-negotiable deadline staring up at you. November 30, 2026.
Wow. That's what, 6 months?
Exactly, 6 months. You have 6 months to rip 10,000 humanoid robots out of their, you know, pristine research labs and literally force them into active real-world operation.
Which is just a staggering timeline. I mean, demanding 10,000 operational humanoids isn't just some ambitious quota.
Right.
It's a total mandate for massive scale operational readiness. They are basically forcing the entire industry to abandon controlled environments.
Just jump straight into the deep end.
Exactly. Straight into the daily grind across over 100 high-value application scenarios.
Which really brings us to the core mission of today's deep dive. We are unpacking a remarkably detailed analysis provided by lawyer Kyung Jin Kim.
It's a fantastic breakdown, really.
It really is. The text explores this super aggressive force march deployment of embodied AI and robotics in China.
And importantly, contrasting it heavily with the much more cautious, methodical approach we're seeing in places like South Korea.
Right. So to really grasp the magnitude of what lawyer Kyung Jin Kim is presenting, we have to look past the metal, right?
Yeah, we have to recognize that this is not fundamentally a story about cool new hardware.
It's deeper than that.
Much deeper. It's a philosophical shift in how artificial intelligence actually learns.
Which is fascinating.
The entire Chinese policy rests on this concept called Shijing Shixin.
And that translates to real scene, real training.
But exactly. Yeah. Real scene, real training.
Okay, let's unpack that for a second. Because how does training in the real world fundamentally differ from what these AI models have been doing for years?
You mean in the massive computer simulations?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
If you can simulate a factory floor a billion times a day on a server, why do you physically need the robot stumbling around a real one?
Because a simulation, I mean, no matter how vast or detailed it is inherently clean.
Right. It's perfect math.
Exactly. But a real factory floor is dirty. It's unpredictable. You have grease spilled on the floor, changing the friction coefficient of a robot's footstep.
Oh, wow. Yeah, a computer might not account for random grease.
Right. Or you have sunlight streaming through a skylight, fluctuating wildly throughout the day, which just totally messes with the robot's optical sensors.
Because the lighting is constantly changing.
Yeah. And then you have human workers whose movements just don't follow any programmed algorithm.
People are chaotic.
Highly chaotic. So training a robot in a simulation is kind of like practicing for a marathon by running on a treadmill in an air-conditioned gym.
You perfect the mechanics, but you're not ready for the real world.
Exactly. You are completely unprepared for a pothole or a sudden gust of wind or, you know, a stray dog running across your path.
The real world has friction.
Yes. And friction is what actually forces an AI to become truly adaptable.
So when you put 10,000 robots into that friction, generating all that multimodal data, the vision, the sound, the physical resistance, you create this data moat.
A data moat that a simulated model simply cannot cross.
Right, because a robot doing a backflip on a pristine stage just can't compete with a robot that survived a 10-hour shift on a messy factory floor.
Exactly.
But I do have to push back on this mandate for a second.
Sure, go ahead.
When I hear about these massive government quotas, you know, 10,000 units in 6 months, I immediately think of massive inefficiency.
Like a vanity project.
Yeah, exactly. Like, isn't this just moving government money from the left pocket to the right pocket? State-owned enterprises buying from state-backed manufacturers just to hit some arbitrary political target.
Well, that's the natural assumption, right?
Yeah.
But former lawmaker Kyung Jin Kim's analysis actually reveals a much more rigid and structurally sound economic mechanism underneath the mandate.
Really? So it's not just a blind subsidy?
No, it's not. This administrative order forces buyers and sellers into a binding relationship, but it bridges the massive financial risk using a robot as a service model.
Or race, right. Break that down for us. Why does the race model matter so much here?
Well, it solves the absolute most brutal problem in hardware manufacturing, which is often called the Valley of Death.
The Valley of Death. Sounds intense.
It is. Designing a prototype robot is hard enough, but tooling a factory to mass produce that robot costs millions before you ever sell a single unit.
Right. The upfront costs are insane.
Yeah. And buyers, on the other hand, they don't want to spend massive upfront capital, what we call CapEx, on totally unproven technology.
Why buy a $1 million robot that might fall over tomorrow?
Exactly. So under the Arrayus model, the factory doesn't buy the humanoid, they rent it.
Oh, like leasing a piece of heavy equipment.
Yeah, or it's exactly like leasing a massive commercial office printer, where you literally just pay per page.
And if the printer breaks, well, it's the manufacturer's problem, not yours.
Precisely. It entirely removes the CapEx hurdle for the buyer.
That makes a lot of sense.
And furthermore, to alleviate the risk of a rented robot malfunctioning and, say, halting a multi-million-dollar production line.
Which would be catastrophic.
Right. So the government mandate actually includes specialized insurance policies and bond financing.
So the technology is totally cradled within this state capital package.
Yes. It guarantees demand while protecting the end user from financial ruin if things go wrong.
And we're already seeing the concrete results of this on the factory floor. The source text gives us some pretty incredible data points.
Yeah, the real-world examples are wild.
Let's look at CATL's battery factory back in December 2025.
Okay.
They brought in a robot named Mose One, developed by a company called Spirit AI.
Right, Mose One.
And Mose One was assigned to high-voltage testing, basically physically plugging in connectors at the very end of the production line.
A very delicate, high-stakes job.
Absolutely. And the results were staggering. Mose One achieved a 99% plus success rate.
Wow.
And get this, it was working three times faster than human workers.
See, the piece that most people miss about Mose One's success is how it actually achieved that speed and accuracy.
Right. It's not just moving fast for the sake of it.
No, it's driven by Spirit AI's proprietary VLA model, which stands for Vision, Language, and Action.
Vision, Language, and Action. Okay, how is that different from a normal robot?
To understand why it's revolutionary, you have to look at traditional robotics. A traditional factory robot is essentially blind.
Like it just knows its routine.
Exactly. It's programmed to move its arm to a highly specific, pre-programmed XYZ coordinate.
So if the battery needs to plug in is accidentally bumped, like 2 inches to the left.
A traditional robot will just smash the connector right into the empty space, potentially destroying the whole product.
Because it doesn't actually know what a battery is. It only knows coordinates in space.
Yes. But a VLA model fundamentally changes that. It processes the visual geometry of the workspace in real time.
So it's actually looking at the battery.
It understands the command linguistically, and it uses spatial reasoning to adapt.
So if the battery is 2 inches to the left,
Mose One's cameras recognize the shift. The AI recalculates the trajectory on the fly, and it uses its 26 force control joints to gently guide the connector into the proper slot.
That is wild. It's dynamic, real-time problem solving, not just rigid repetition.
Exactly.
And the deployment just scales up from there. Over at Geely's Zeekr 5G factory, UB Tech deployed their Walker S2 robot.
That was a huge milestone.
Yeah, the tech specifically notes this wasn't just a single demo robot isolated in some corner. It was a fleet of multiple robots working collaboratively across different zones.
Real fleet deployment.
And they cut the battery module assembly time by 15%. But the mechanical detail that really stands out to me is the Walker S2's autonomous battery swap feature.
Oh, that is a crucial logistical breakthrough right there.
It really is. Because, you know, when the robot runs low on power, it doesn't hold up the production line by plugging into a wall and sitting there for hours.
Right. Time is money on an assembly line.
Exactly. It autonomously swaps its own battery in 3 minutes.
Which means these humanoid fleets can literally run 247.
Without human intervention. Now, lawyer Kung Jin Kim contrasts this aggressive 247 operational reality with what's going on in South Korea.
Yeah, and the contrast is pretty stark. The source notes that in May 2026, South Korea announced a 50.4 billion won plan to develop AI humanoids.
50.4 billion won.
With the goal of testing them in hospitals by 2029.
By 2029, so 3 years later.
Right. The theoretical direction is correct, but the speed and the scale are entirely mismatched compared to China.
South Korea is taking the slow road.
Very slow. They remain heavily bogged down in regulatory sandboxes. They are spending years navigating intricate safety rules and labor laws just to get a handful of robots into highly controlled test beds.
While China is force-feeding 10,000 robots into the chaotic wild right now just to harvest all that data.
Exactly.
But, you know, saving 15% on a car assembly line is ultimately just about profit margins, right? If a robot drops a battery, you lose some money.
Sure.
The stakes change entirely when the cost of a mistake is a human life.
Oh, absolutely.
And that leads us to the deployment of these machines into uncontrolled, lethal environments. I want to highlight a massive figure from former lawmaker Kunjin Kim's text here.
Let's hear it.
On April 22, 2026, China's state grid committed 6.8 billion RMB.
Which is roughly 1.3 trillion Korean won.
Right. And that was to purchase about 8,500 robots.
And if you look under the hood of that specific budget, it tells you exactly what the state actually values.
Oh, so.
Out of that 6.8 billion RMB, 2.5 billion is allocated for just 500 humanoid liveline robots.
Wait, let's do the math on that. That is 5 million RMB for a single robot.
Yes.
That's nearly $1 million US each. That is an astronomical price tag. How does any company justify spending $1 million on a single piece of hardware?
Well, you justify it by looking at the environment it operates in. Liveline work involves repairing power infrastructure that is still actively carrying hundreds of thousands of volts.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. A single millimeter of miscalculation by a human worker doesn't just result in an injury, it is instantly fatal.
That's terrifying.
It is. So State Grid calculates that one of these robots saves roughly 500,000 to 800,000 RMB per human worker annually.
Okay, so financially, the ROI, the return on investment, actually pays out in about 2 to 3 years.
Exactly. But the financial payback is totally secondary. The true value proposition is entirely removing human beings from the kill zone.
You really get a visceral sense of that danger in the text when it describes the Changtai ultra-high voltage substation.
The description is intense.
It really is. We are talking about a 1,000 kilovolt environment.
Right.
The magnetic field in this facility is so incredibly intense that if a human walks inside, the metal frames of their glasses will physically vibrate against their cheekbones.
I can't even imagine that.
Just imagine standing in a room where the invisible energy in the air is literally shaking the metal on your face.
It is a fundamentally terrifying environment for a human body.
It is. And instead of sending people in, they are deploying quadruped robots from Deep Robotics.
Well, the robot does.
Right. Having them climb steep, slippery metal grid stairs in these insane boiler rooms.
And this raises a profound point about how these AI systems actually perceive these hostile environments.
What do you mean?
Well, they aren't just navigating visually with cameras. They are actively listening.
Listening to what?
These robots use highly advanced AI audio models to monitor the machinery.
But how does an audio model diagnose a machine better than an experienced human mechanic?
Because a human mechanic might hear a general hum and think, yeah, that turbine sounds fine.
Right, it sounds normal to our ears.
But the robot's microphones pick up frequencies far, far beyond human capability. The AI compares the real-time acoustic signature of that specific turbine against a massive data set of a perfectly healthy motor.
So it knows exactly what perfection sounds like.
Exactly. And if the turbine's vibration deviates by just a few hertz, the multimodal AI flags it.
That's incredible.
They are achieving over 90% alert accuracy for equipment failure. They're catching microscopic vibrations before the machine actually breaks.
So it's a diagnostic tool, not just a camera on legs.
Exactly.
It fundamentally shifts our understanding of workplace safety and really human labor. I mean, think about a robot like Unitree's B2 wading through muddy, pitch-black underground cable tunnels for hours on end.
Or Deep Robotics X20 mapping a toxic, collapsed coal mine using 3D LiDAR and gas sensors.
Yeah, fully assessing the structural integrity before a single human rescue worker even has to step foot in the dark.
The paradigm shift here is that the human being is no longer the sensory probe.
That's a great way to put it.
The human is sitting safely at a desk, interpreting the data that the robot gathered from the danger zone.
And the data these robots are accumulating in the process is invaluable.
Completely invaluable. By forcing these machines into the most hostile, unforgiving environments imaginable, they are baking this insane level of resilience and adaptability into their algorithms.
Things no laboratory simulation could ever replicate.
Never.
But these hostile environments, you know, the factories, the collapsed mines, the high-voltage lines, they aren't actually the end goal, are they?
Not at all.
They're just a brutal training ground for the ultimate prize, which is an environment you, the listener, are intimately familiar with.
Your own living room.
Exactly, your living room. Because the logic dictates that if this technology can survive a toxic coal mine, it can easily survive folding laundry or dodging a coffee table.
And that transition from the industrial to the domestic is happening far faster than most analysts anticipated.
We see this clearly in early June 2026 on JD.com. UB Tech lists the U1 Home humanoid robot.
And the retail price on that is 210,000 RMB.
Right. That is literally the price of a luxury car.
It's huge.
And yet, within a matter of days, nearly 4,000 people put down a non-refundable deposit of 3,000 RMB just to reserve a spot in line.
Which is crazy. That specific JD.com listing marks the exact moment the humanoid robot shifted from being an industrial tool to a highly desired consumer product.
People actually want these in their homes.
Yes. And the Chinese government capitalized on that consumer momentum almost instantly?
Oh, of course they did.
Sure. On June 18, 2026, the Ministry of Commerce released their AI plus consumption policy.
AI plus consumption?
Yeah, and the explicit target demographic of this policy is one old, one young, meaning elder care and child companionship.
So the government is actively engineering the integration of these robots into domestic family life. But how do you convince a whole population to adopt a car-priced robot into their home?
You do it through aggressive, synchronized economic levers. The government tied these consumer AI robots directly to their national trade-in subsidy programs.
Ah, so they artificially lower the barrier to entry for the average family.
Exactly. But they went a step further, proposing new good house construction standards.
Wait. They are changing how homes are physically built just to accommodate the robots.
Yes, they are. Future residential architecture under these standards would eliminate floor thresholds, so robots can just roll freely from room to room.
Wow.
And they'd include built-in charging ports right at the baseboards.
That is a massive economic flywheel.
It really is. The government subsidies drive early consumer demand.
And that guaranteed demand allows hardware manufacturers to scale up their production lines.
Right. And scaling up production inherently lowers the per unit cost of building the robot.
And then once the unit cost drops far enough, the product becomes affordable on its own, eliminating the need for the initial subsidies altogether.
Exactly. It completely pulls the entire industry through that hardware valley of death we talked about earlier.
Now, when we talk about elder care and robots in the home, lawyer Kung Jin Kim provides a very necessary medical reality check in the text.
Yes, this is an important distinction to make.
Especially focusing on a company called Fourier. So Fourier was founded by Guji, who's a former executive from National Instruments.
Right.
And they recently secured a massive expansion into Malaysia, a 10 million RMB contract to supply the Perkasa National Rehab Center.
A huge deal for them.
Yeah. And they also closed an 800 million RMB funding round with heavy-hitting investors, which included Ramco's Prosperity 7.
Now, this is a critical juncture where we need to be incredibly precise about the technology because the media often conflates different stages of development.
Right. They see one headline and assume humanoids are running hospitals.
Exactly. Fourier has built a highly successful line of exoskeleton rehabilitation robots.
Okay. The exoskeleton.
Yes. Those specific machines are medically proven. They are actively treating thousands of patients and generating massive amounts of clinical data and cash flow right now.
Real world application.
Real world. And Fourier is utilizing that massive success to fund the development of their humanoid robot, the GR series.
And this is the crucial nuance that former lawmaker Kyung Jin Kim emphasizes in the text. The humanoid, specifically the GR3, is strictly in the proof of concept phase at that Malaysian clinic.
Right.
And fun fact, they actually designed it in soft Mirandi color, so it looks, you know, friendly and less like a metallic Terminator.
Smart design choice, honestly.
For sure. But it is not physically lifting patients or performing actual medical treatments yet. It is basically conducting cognitive training demonstrations using basic voice and vision models. Even the founder, Guji, explicitly admits that humanoids are not the stars of the clinical floor right now.
Not yet, at least.
Right. The technology still requires massive clinical validation and rigorous local regulatory approval before it can safely touch a patient.
But here's the thing. While hardware companies like Ubitech and Fourier are fighting this grueling battle inch by inch to validate their metal joints and their motors,
the software giants are doing something completely different.
A completely different and arguably much more powerful strategy.
Let's talk about Alibaba then, because their move in mid-June 2026 really changes the whole board.
Oh, it shakes everything up.
They release their Quenrobot models, and they break it down into specialized brains. There's Quenrobot Nav for physical movement.
Right.
Quenrobot Manip for grasping objects. And Quenrobot World for understanding physical causality and spatial reasoning.
Highly specialized models.
Yeah. And the crazy part is they don't seem interested in building the robot's physical body at all.
No, they don't care about the metal.
They're trying to be the Android operating system of the entire robotics world.
That is exactly their playbook. Think about it. If building hardware is a notoriously difficult, low-margin business plagued by supply chain issues and factory tooling costs, why bother?
Let someone else do the heavy lifting.
Exactly. Alibaba wants to provide the intelligence. If they can convince every hardware startup to use Alibaba's foundational Quinn models as their operating system, then the hardware makers just become commoditized metal.
Wow.
And more importantly, every single piece of physical data collected by those robots, whether they are in a factory in Beijing or a living room in Kuala Lumpur, flows directly back into Alibaba's servers.
It's an inescapable loop. The data from the real world makes Alibaba's model smarter, which then makes the model more indispensable to the hardware makers, who then deploy more robots, which gathers even more data.
It's a massive flywheel.
So this raises a huge question regarding sovereignty. If other countries, take South Korea, as highlighted in the text, if they don't build their own domestic robots and their own foundational operating systems, do they just become digital tenants in Alibaba's physical data ecosystem?
That is the ultimate geopolitical threat identified by lawyer Kung Jin Kim.
That's a scary thought.
It's a dual-pronged attack, really. First, you lose the hardware market entirely because these heavily subsidized, battle-tested Chinese robots are simply cheaper and more capable than anything a slower regulatory environment can produce.
Right. The data moat is just too deep.
Exactly.
Okay.
Second, and much more dangerously, because of the regulatory vacuums in places like South Korea regarding domestic robot deployment, there is no legal framework to protect the physical data of the citizens.
Because the laws just haven't caught up to the tech.
Precisely. If a highly capable, affordable foreign robot enters a living room and the country doesn't have stringent laws dictating where that physical mapping data is stored and processed, that country basically loses sovereignty over its own domestic physical reality.
And that really brings us to the core takeaways from former lawmaker Kung Jin Kim's text. The era of the novelty demo robot, you know, performing choreographed routines on a stage, that era is dead.
Long dead.
China is leveraging immense state capital, mandatory deployment deadlines, and RAND's financial models to forcefully push these machines out of the lab and into the messy, chaotic real world.
Yeah, they are building an embodied AI ecosystem forged in millions of hours of real-world friction.
While competitors are still basically sitting in committee meetings, waiting for regulatory approvals in theoretical sandboxes.
The technological gap is widening incredibly fast. And it is not widening because of a lack of theoretical computer science in other nations.
Right, the math is there.
The math is there. It is widening because of a massive, insurmountable disparity in real-world physical application and data accumulation.
Which leaves us with this final thought for today's deep dive. We started this whole discussion looking at a boardroom mandate in Beijing, but the end game is literally the quiet corners of your own living room.
Yeah, it's getting very personal very quickly.
As these robots make the inevitable leap from high-voltage kill zones and collapsed mines to the exact space where you sleep and raise your children, I want you to think deeply about the data they are actively collecting just to function.
They are mapping everything.
They are mapping the specific cadence of how you walk. They are memorizing the exact layout of your furniture. They are processing the unique sound and the emotional tone of your family's voices.
It's an incredible amount of personal data.
It is. So if a foreign software platform sets the global standard for consumer robotics before your own country even drafts the privacy laws, who truly owns the physical data of your daily life? Are you preparing to swim in the ocean? Or are you just sitting in a sandbox waiting for the tide to come in?
This program is provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim.